on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
All righty, guys, welcome to another episode of the Auto Bid. This is going to be your March Madness episode, man. We're going to dive into the bracket. So we have one of the best bracketologists in the business. Lucas Harkins is here with us today, man. And we're going to dive right into, obviously, the committee and selection show teams that got left in and left out. And then we're going to give you some upset picks and, of course, some final four picks as well. But before we get into all that, we want to make sure to remind you guys, make sure you guys are liking this podcast, giving us a rating, giving us 5 stars, wherever you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you're tuning into this podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, man. It does go a long way. If you see our content on social media, man, give us a like, retweet, all of the above. And then also make sure you guys are streaming my guy, Pull Up Tay's music. That was him on the intro. Going to be him on the outro. His music is out on all platforms, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. His new project, Why Stop Now, is out everywhere. So make sure you guys go and get that, man. But I mentioned, man, we're joined by Lucas Harkins. Also, my guy, Drew, down there in Portugal, man. He had some Wi-Fi issues earlier, but we got that all figured out. So first of all, Drew, how you doing today, man?
I'm all right, man. Got off a flight, man. Had to come over here to the islands of Terceira. It's right off the coast of Portugal. I'm actually closer to the United States. I'm only about 3 or 4 hours from the United States right now. So I'm almost halfway home. I think I could probably catch a flight and be back in DC pretty soon. But nonetheless, man, you know, excited. It's March Madness time. Excited to get into this bracketology stuff, you know, watching college basketball. And of course, you know, while we're recording this podcast is Tuesday night, you know, and the Bachelor finale is tonight. So I mean, that's really what I'm looking forward to, you know, getting into that, finish recording this and seeing what my guy Clayton is going to do with his Susie, Rachel and Gabby situation. So, you know, it's a great evening, Ace. It's a great evening.
I can't believe you called him your guy, man. You're really condoning that fool's actions, man. I can't believe that we're going into that on this podcast. Nonetheless, my wine is ready, and I can't wait for that. Going to be on while Indiana and Wyoming are playing, so I'm going to be looking back and forth between the Bachelor finale, and I'll have Indiana and Wyoming in the background somewhere, you know, so I don't miss the real show. But we have Lucas Harkins on here today, man, and obviously, Lucas, you've had a lot to say over the past few days about, you know, just the committee in general, and, you know, Drew and I, obviously aren't, you know, too keen with obviously what goes into the teams getting selected. And in my opinion, what my saw the selection show and saw who got left in, who got left out, largely I was pretty okay with it. I know obviously A&M was the biggest trend as far as like why they got left out as opposed to, you know, a lot of people thought that they should have been in. But for you, what were your biggest gripes with the selection committee and with how the bracket turned out?
You know, I think my only gripe really comes back to one thing. I've talked about it a few times now, but I think that it's really the crux of the argument for me. Is it doesn't really feel like Saturday and Sunday leading into Selection Sunday necessarily mattered for selection or seeding. I think there's a few examples of that. Virginia Tech getting slotted as an 11 felt like a bit of a slight after winning the ACC. Duke still landing on a 2 seed. After losing the SEC, whereas Tennessee landed on a 3 despite winning Saturday and Sunday to get the SEC title. Yale getting a 14 seed felt like they just thought Princeton was going to win and they were going to give Princeton that 14 and they just took them out and put Yale in the spot. It just felt like those games didn't necessarily matter as much as they should. And I'm not saying that they matter more than any other game earlier in the year either. The committee is very open about total body of work matters, and I think that's the case. Though the total body of work includes the last week of the season too. And I think that was probably my biggest gripe with everything altogether. With that said, I think bubble conversations are probably the not the dumbest, but I think that they're not really my favorite thing to talk about, because when you get to the bubble, if you're really in the last 5 teams in the field or the first 5 out, you had 30 chances to make it better and make it an easier decision. The seeding choices were like, if you're a protected seed, like Duke or Tennessee, the possibility to get into a better geographical preference at that point that they've earned, Now, I do think Texas A&M was snubbed with that said, but I do believe that that all those teams kind of near the cut line, like Dayton had opportunities to not lose three quad four games in the first month of the season. There are always things you can point to with bubble teams to make an argument for them out of the field. And when you look at teams seated higher, those teams didn't have those arguments. So you can make an argument for anybody to get out of the field if you're on the bubble.
Yep. Now, for us novices and for people who even who don't really know kind of a lot of the terminology that goes into the bracketing process, I mean, I've heard, you know, the net rankings and, you know, KenPom and all these different type of metrics. For the people who may not be kind of privy to those things, can you kind of explain what kind of the most – some of these most important metrics are that kind of go into the bracket, and then kind of how those have an effect on who gets in the field and not.
Yeah. So there's six team sheet metrics. Team sheet is what the committee gets, which goes through, there are six core metrics on this. The net is the NCAA evaluation tool, but your own net matters to some extent, but mainly the net is used to figure out quadrant records. So if you play a road top 75 team in the net, that's a quad one game, a home game against the top 30, is quad one, and neutral site against the top 50 is quad one.
So quad one is only home games against top 30?
Correct.
So play a home game against the 35th team. That's not a quad one win.
It's a quad two game. If you beat four seed Providence at home this year, that's a quad two game.
What?
Meanwhile, wow. if you go on the road and beat Towson this year, I guess, that's a quad one win.
Wow.
What? I never knew that.
Never knew that. Learn something new every day. This is why we got to do this on the podcast.
They made that change, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago when they started in the net. They wanted to value more road wins. And I think they probably devalued top-tier home wins in that. Like, I think I get beating a top 75 team on the road as quad one, but I think beating a top 50 team at home is pretty darn good too. Yeah. When you get to the top 30 – and people talk about quad 1A wins, which is an even deeper part of that, which is just the top 15 in the net at home is quad 1A. And is it really that much better to beat Iowa at home versus Illinois? No. I think there's something to be said for, I think people get a little bit too caught up in quadrant records when they look at things. The committee's not dumb. The committee sees every result on your team sheet. It's organized in quad 1, quad 2, and columns. But they see you played at Texas and you won by X. They see the score. They see the time it was. They see the location. If it's a neutral site, they list the exact location. They write at Bahamas Island Showcase or whatever in it. They see all of that. And I think there's more information on the team sheet under those quadrant records that people don't necessarily know. In terms of pure metrics, because I think that's the easiest thing for people to talk about, because there's only six numbers. You can average them if you want. It just makes arguments a little bit simpler, especially when most arguments, you only got 280 characters to make one. So I think you have net being the NCAA evaluation tool, and there's two resume metrics. They're results-based. They're mostly there to rank teams based on what they've done. So you'll see Wisconsin top 10 in both of those, Providence top 15 in both of those, for example. That's the KPI, that's the Kevin Paga Index, and strength of record, which is on ESPN's page. And then there's three quality metrics. So you guys already mentioned KenPom. That's the most notable one, most often discussed. BPI is the ESPN version, basically, of KenPom. And Sagarin has been around since the 90s, and it looks like it if you go to the website.
Okay, so I guess my question is for a team like an A&M, right, why was it that they were left out? Was it just because of that all of their wins came in the latter part of the year, or was it just because of the fact that were their metrics not good, like for a team like that? And then also for me personally speaking, right, I look at a team like Notre Dame that got in the tournament, right, and I say, all right, how did they get in? And a team like Wake Forest, didn't Wake Forest beat them head to head? They beat UNC by like 20, beat Virginia Tech, I want to say, by like 20. They have a better overall record. They're 23-9, and Notre Dame is 22-10. I think Notre Dame was second in the ACC, and Wake was a little bit, you know, below them. But I think if you look at both of those teams, in my opinion, I would say Wake Forest is probably the better team if you just use the eye test. Now, is there an argument for that, for that argument, and then as well as the A&M? I mean, what are your thoughts on those two scenarios?
You know, I didn't think either Wake Forest and Notre Dame necessarily deserved to make the field, although I do agree with you on Wake Forest and the eye test. Williams is phenomenal. That's a fun team to watch, and I would like to see them in the tournament. Their issue reminds me of NC State a few years ago. Both teams got left out of the field because they played a horrible non-conference schedule. Not to criticize Wake Forest here, but I think Steve Forbes might have thought he didn't have as good a team as he did.
Yeah.
And scheduled, like, we're going to pick up wins, we're going to have a good year, we're going to build the program, because I think he's doing a great job there. And it turns out that they were pretty darn good this year, and it would have been nice if they picked up an extra win or two in non-conference, which is just kind of a tough spot to be. But Wake Forest's non-conference sanctity schedule, I think, is what left it out. Notre Dame, they referenced, by they, I mean the committee chair, referenced Kentucky. I mean, Notre Dame's win over Kentucky at home earlier in the year is the main reason for their inclusion. And I get that. And I think that that is a great win. But when you compare, if you're comparing Texas A&M and Notre Dame at this point in the schedule, if your number one argument for Notre Dame is they have one 2-point home win against Kentucky, I don't know what you watched out of Texas A&M the last week. They beat at, they won at Alabama by 16. They won an overtime against Florida, who didn't make the field, but it's still a pretty good win. They neutral site beat 2-seed Auburn by 5. Neutral site beat 4-seed Arkansas by 18. Those are all better wins, except for Florida. Three of those wins are better than anything Notre Dame had, especially if you're going to want to value road wins. And I think Texas A&M, that really puzzled me. I guess their metrics at the start of the week when the committee got together, I think on Tuesday, their metrics are more in the 50s, and they ended more in the 40s. So I think that was such a big jump over the week. But I think if there was, I think honestly, if I'm speaking from the, if the selection show was on Monday, I think Texas A&M's in the field.
If it was on Monday as opposed to Sunday,
I think if they took an extra day and really took into account more strongly the last, I can't imagine Texas A&M gets left out of the field. I've been doing bracketology for 6 years. It's one of the teams that I'm most confused by not getting in the field. And maybe I'm biased towards the recency results. And Texas A&M, as I mentioned when I was talking about bubbles earlier, there's always a reason to leave out a bubble team. And an 8-game losing streak in January and February is the reason they got left out. To make it easy, you don't lose at home to Missouri. And then they did. So like, it's hard. I think it's a tough finish. They played great down the stretch. And to lose to a 3-seed in Tennessee in the SEC championship game, and that's the reason you're left out or something, I don't know if that's fair, but I think every bubble team dug their own grave in some capacity.
Right. Now, one thing I always wondered was when the NCAA is putting the actual brackets together, right, how do they determine, like, the seeds and then the location? Like, because if I'm not mistaken, Villanova is in the West. South region. Yeah. So, like, how do they determine where these teams go? How do these teams end up having to go, you know, out of their geographic location to play games? Like, how does that work?
So, I think they try to keep first round geographical pairings as close as they can. Like when you Gonzaga's out in Portland, I'm pretty sure. And once I was like, Boise State's going to get an 8-seed, they're probably going to get Gonzaga because they're going to send Boise out to Portland, which makes sense. Villanova's in the South, but it gets its first two rounds in Pittsburgh. That kind of idea. Wisconsin got the luckiest straw of anybody in America.
They're in what, Chicago?
They get Milwaukee the first two rounds and then Chicago in the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight. It is, my family, it is perfect. It's like the perfect two weekends. Now, it's not like their draw is easy. I mean, no one's draw in the NCAA tournament is easy. Yeah. Colgate's a really good basketball team, shoots the crap out of the ball. But just from a geographical standpoint, they got an unbelievably good draw. So I think the first round is a little bit more geographically, I think, kinder to other teams. When you get to the full regional, so Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games, that depends. I think that it really, for me, breaks down more into bracket rules. So the SEC in particular was the case this year. The top four teams in a conference that are on the top four seed lines have to be in different regions. They aren't allowed to be together.
The top four teams in conferences?
So the SEC had four teams in the top four seed lines.
Okay.
Tennessee, Auburn, Kentucky, and
Arkansas?
And Arkansas, yes. Yeah. They're all going to be in four different regions. They have to be. That's the rules. The top four teams, and those only in the top four seed lines. So if Arkansas got to a 5, they could go to any of the other three regions.
Yeah.
But since they landed on the 4 line, they have to be separate. And because of that, Arkansas was pretty much destined to go west. Jeez. Basically, from 3 weeks ago, they were going to go west because Kentucky was going to get the east as the top 2 seed. Auburn was going to go to the Midwest as the second one. And then you were probably going to see Tennessee take the South because they were going to be either the last two or they were going to be the first three. And they ended up as one of the first threes, and they got the South, which sent Arkansas West, and they were going to get screwed regardless, which sucks. But I think for regional-wise, it comes down to a lot of the bracket rules, and then you just kind of have to plug teams in as best you can to fit them in.
So with the mid-majors, how does that work? I know obviously you said there were some beats with you know, obviously Yale. I know Georgia State got underseeded. Like, yeah. do they take that into consideration with those lower one-bid leagues and stuff?
I'm not sure. I haven't really looked at it too much in sub-regionals, so the first round and second round. Although I was puzzled when I was doing the Field of 68 live show during the selection show, so I wasn't really paying as much attention as I normally would. Though it did throw me off a bit that I think Georgia State got a 16, which I think they didn't deserve. I thought a healthy Georgia State's playing like a 14 seed. Yeah. But they got a 16 and were sent to Portland or California, whereas Cal State Fullerton is the 15 in that region and is going to Georgia. Explain, I don't know. There's something to be said for, I think, the mid-majors aren't necessarily as given as much geographical preference. And I think that that's probably to save, but to give preference to the teams that had higher seeds. They'll follow S-curve formula a little bit more. So S-curve would mean their top one seed is going to get the worst 16 typically. And they'll follow that tracking. And this year was a little bit tricky on the one line, because I believe Gonzaga and Baylor both played one of the 16s at some point in the year. Not anymore. They both played Alcorn State, which ended up not making the tournament. But for bracketology purposes, that was a bit tricky. But I think they'll mostly just will follow S-curve formula to keep things as even as possible once they get to mid-majors.
Now, you know, we touched on a little bit the whole Tennessee-Duke gripe. I've heard that a lot. We've talked about Texas A&M. For you, when you look back at the bracket, who got left out, the seeds, what was your biggest gripe, like, with the bracket as far as, you know, a team that you think really got hosed the worst?
You know, honestly, I think it's Tennessee from a seeding standpoint. I think they deserved a two, but I think getting them in the South is probably more important to Volunteers fans. If you can argue that the difference between a 15 and a 14 isn't that big anyways, it's more about which 15 or 14 you draw. A lot of those teams are pretty similar. They're separated by four spots on the S-curve for a reason. They're close teams. If you're off a two seed line sim projection, that's a little different. All of the teams I had seeded were within one spot. I would say the other gripe I would have, honestly, is Villanova going to the South. I'm sure they did this out of trying to keep the top four seeds as even as possible, because I bet they had Kentucky ahead of Villanova in their overall curve, and they wanted to not screw over one of the one seeds by putting a better two in there. But I really think that you probably could have made a case for Kentucky would have preferred the South and Villanova the East and just swapped those two, and both of them are happy. And I say that part as a Villanova person, because in the East, the regional there is Wells Fargo Center. And Villanova purposely only plays two home games at the Wells Fargo Center because they know bracket rules. If you play three, you can't play there in the NCAA tournament. They purposely play two in the regular season so they can play there. And they didn't finish up high enough on the two line to get there. But that is one that I think Villanova fans at least could probably have a gripe with. And in part, that comes back to that, what I was talking about with the weekend games. Villanova won the Big East.
Yeah. That's definitely interesting, because obviously I thought that they were for sure getting that Philadelphia regional. We were going to get, like, you know, the whole Delaware, Villanova.
Yeah, I mean, it would have screwed over the one seed there. I mean, or the three, whatever. If Purdue has to go play Villanova in Wells Fargo Center, good luck. Right. But I think that's something that comes into play some years. If you have the right regional, you have the right regional.
Yeah. Well, we still got a Villanova Delaware matchup that's happening in the South this year, as opposed to in Wells Fargo. I don't know exactly where that game is being played, but, you know, it should be fun. The Dylan Painter Bowl. So hopefully he can maybe pull off a miracle in that game. But
we talk about the Foster Lawyer Bowl all week.
There's a bunch of bowls. Isn't there one more? I think it's Foster Lawyer. It's Dylan Payne. I think there's one more kid going up against his former team. I can't remember who it is right now, but I feel like I saw it somewhere. But anyway, those two are
going to be. I think it's possible, at least right off the top of my head, what I can think of is if Jelly Walker gets the Sweet 16, he could feasibly play Seton Hall.
That would be sick.
I'm right. Jordan Walker started at at Seton Hall for a year, right? Yeah.
Well, look, I think this is a great segue to get into our next subject. So we want to talk about some upset picks, man. So we're gonna go all in a round table here. So I want to start with you, Lucas. Give me, obviously every year that there's a 12-5, the 13-4. Give me two of those that you think are most likely to happen this year. Maybe one 12-5, one 13-4. If you got two in one, because in my opinion, the 12-5s aren't that juicy this year. There's one that I think could really happen. The other ones, I'm like, yeah. And that Indiana Wyoming one, I don't really count because they're both great teams. So I don't really count that one. But give me two that you're keeping your eye on.
You know, I think the last time there was an upset that people were so confident in happening was Loyola over Miami the year Loyola made the Final Four. Everyone was all over that pick. Like, the Ramblers are going to beat the Hurricanes. Turned out it was a buzzer beating win and the start of a great run. But I was staring at my bracket all week. I'm like, I'm going to pick up points. I'm going to pick the favorite anyways. And that didn't want to work out for me. And I'm going to try and learn my lesson this year and take South Dakota State over Providence. South Dakota State's a 13 seed. That's a 2-point underdog. That is practically unheard of. I have a piece coming out tomorrow that's looking at analytical trends in each first round matchup. And I think I have a stat from that Providence South Dakota State game that blew my mind as I was researching it. And I'll just read it off because I think it's awesome. Providence is 2-4 this season when teams shoot better than 39% from three against them. Not that many times, only six, but they're 2-4 in those games. South Dakota State has hit over 39% from three in 10 straight games. That's an absurd straight. Like, they shot 46% from three in conference play. Like, it is, I get it. South Dakota State's defense is rough, and that's a problem. I get it. But, man, basketball's about getting buckets. And if South Dakota State gets them down, I think they're going to have a really good chance in that game, which would be a shame, honestly. I think Providence had a great season, and I think they got screwed because they got a 12 seed as a four. Because South Dakota State is not a 13 seed. Let me tell you, that is Baylor Shireman is a dog. That's a good team.
Yo, people talking about, Justin Bonai is gonna put Baylor Shireman in.
It's a fun matchup. I think Bonai is good, but man,
he's good. Shireman, but yo, Baylor Shireman is not like he's not no regular dude, bro. Like, I wouldn't be like I'm not saying he's gonna cook Bonai, but like you're not gonna just go out there and strap him. He's gonna score 5 points. Like, he's gonna score.
I think there's something to be said that there are guys who get a lot of buckets and make a lot of plays and have great numbers from these double-digit mid-major seeds that are like an even 6 foot, and they get into the tournament and they're a little undersized. Bill Shireman's a legit 6'6". Yeah. Like, that is not an easy guy to match up with.
Hey, what are we talking about here? He can put up the point, he can shoot it. He's that size.
He's really good. And I think he might be the best player. Actually, he probably is the best player on the floor in that game, which then will lead me into another upset pick. Kevin Sweeney, the great Kevin Sweeney, commented on Field of 68 this week. When you have the best guard on the floor in March Madness, you got yourself a shot. And Jelly Walker is the best guard on the floor against Houston this week. I think that's a tough matchup in my head because I walked into the selection show thinking whoever UAB draws, I will be taking. I will be taking UAB. I think that Jordan Walker is phenomenal. Michael Ertl, has been really good recently. I mean, I think he played 54 minutes in that triple OT game and in the tournament. Those two guards are really good. They'll really shoot it on you. But Houston is a really tough five. I mean, I know that they didn't really beat anybody in the regular season, and that's the huge issue, but there's a reason predictive metrics exist, and they love Houston. I mean, KenPom loves Houston. They eliminate as much bias as you can have. And those teams and those sites love Houston, which I think makes it difficult to take that kind of pick. But I think that's probably still the most likely 5-12 upset on the board, at least not like a St. Mary's, Indiana. Yeah. I think that might be there. St. Mary's, Wyoming. I think St. Mary's is quite good. And I'm not meaning this as a diss on the West Coast. I really think Tommy Cousy is fantastic. Another one of those guys that gets you good size in that kind of matchup. But I think there's a lot of folks who aren't going to really call Indiana an upset if they win just because it's Indiana.
Yeah. You know, I 100% agree with you. The 12-5, I was like, oh, yeah, this one is one that could really happen. It was a Houston UAB too. So, Drew, what about you?
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm going to stay in the South, and I think that there's going to be two mid-majors advancing to the second round, because I do have UAB over Houston, and I also have Chattanooga over Illinois in that same region. So I think that, you know, I think that Chattanooga is obviously, you know, David Jean-Baptiste, Silvio D'Souza, Malachi Smith. I think they absolutely had the talent to beat Illinois. Man, I think that Illinois is kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team. Like, I think on the one hand, Illinois can, you know, make a Final Four run. But on the other hand, I think they could also very easily be upset in the first round. And obviously, much has been said about the play of Andre Curbelo this year and kind of, you know, what he's going to be able to bring to the table. So, I mean, I think that I'm picking both UAB and Chattanooga to advance past the first round in the South region, man. And another one that I don't feel, you know, I feel like it's unpopular, but I would not be surprised if Richmond upsets Iowa, man. I know everybody's talking about, oh, Iowa has this potent offense and they're going to score all these points, and Keegan Murray, which I agree with 100%. Like, Keegan Murray is probably going to score 30 points. But I do think that Richmond, man, you have 4 fifth-year seniors, man, like, that are in your rotation, that are playing minutes, man. Those guys are old, and those guys are hungry and motivated, man. And I think that, you know, for an Iowa team that doesn't really defend, they don't really – I mean, much has been already made about Fran McCaffrey and his March, you know, March Madness resume and kind of, you know, lack of being able to really advance far. So, I mean, I think that Richmond has as good a shot as anybody to advance in that 12-5 matchup as well.
Don't get me wrong. I think Iowa is great. I think they're playing great. I will preface this before Hawkeyes hate me. But there is something to be said in conference tournaments about teams playing desperate that need to get in the tournament. Man, yeah. Jacob Gilliard's a fifth-year senior, and that man played desperate last weekend. And that was – I've watched Jacob Gilliard. He's an all-time steals leader. He's a phenomenal player. He got it going in the A-10 tournament. I think he had 7 threes against VCU, 6 in the first half. He's playing some of his best offensive ball, and he's already a good defender. He's playing some of his best offense in a long time, and I think that that's an interesting matchup. And to your point on Chattanooga, I will just to hyper back to bracketology stuff for a second. I think Richmond screwed Providence and Illinois, because just going into that game, the play-in games were both going to be 12 seeds. And because Richmond won and got on the 12 seed line, that differentiated things where the play-ins were going to have to be two teams playing on the 11 and two teams playing on the 12, which pushed either Chattanooga or South Dakota State to the 13 seed. I don't want to be the 4 seed facing either of those two teams.
Yeah, damn right about that. What I will say quickly about your Richmond Iowa pick, I think Iowa's elite, and I think that they're probably going to win that game. But what I will say about Richmond is that they just defended an elite offensive team. Davidson's the top 10 offense in the country. Iowa's, I think, 22nd offensive efficiency right now in KenPom. And they held them 37% shooting from the floor and 33% shooting from three. Now, I think that obviously there's no Keegan Murray on Davidson, but I think just their experience having guarded an offense that moves the ball the way that Davidson does and being able to defend the way that they did, having to play a team like Iowa the very next game is something that I think, you know, can work in their favor. And just the momentum coming off that 18 tournament, like, they're a hot team. We've seen teams kind of be able to carry that over into the NCAA tournament. So while I don't think that Richmond wins the game, I think it'll be a lot better game than a lot of people think. The one that I said I agree with Lucas on the 12-5 with UAB and Houston, and you as well, Drew. But I think one other one that we got to watch out for is a 13-4, and it comes from the West bracket, and that is Vermont and Arkansas. And I just think Vermont, man, like these dudes, yo, they just beat UMBC by 40 to win the American East. But I don't think people quite understand like how absurd that is to win a conference tournament game by that many points. Like, UMBC is not a bad team. Like, obviously
they're conference championship game at that.
Conference championship game. Like, but Vermont's come in, they won 8 straight games, 28-5. They had the player of the year in the league in Ryan Davis. Ben Shungu is outstanding. Isaiah Powell is outstanding. And Vermont head coach John Becker said that he thinks this team might be his best team that he's had there yet. And he's had some great teams at the University of Vermont, man. But they're an outstanding offensive team. They've only lost one game, I believe, since like December. And it was to Hartford, where Ryan Davis didn't even play in that basketball game. He's their best player. So another team that's extremely hot, elite offensive team. And they're playing some great basketball right now, man. And so if I had to pick a 13-4, I think that's one more that I would look at. I think that one is coming from the West bracket.
I wish Vermont got someone that wasn't Arkansas.
Yeah.
Arkansas is playing pretty good basketball too. I really like this Vermont team. Davis and Shungo are so good. That I think they're going to be tough. It's really interesting just from what that battle I think that battle is going to be. Arkansas is 18-1 when it holds opponents under 48% on twos. Vermont's 24-0 when it shoots 54% on twos. So whoever wins that battle in down low on Vermont's side of the floor, I think probably wins that game.
I'm loving the stats. The gems here, man. Without further ado, man, we're gonna wrap this up with Lucas, man. Give us your Final Four and your national champion this year in the 2022 NCAA tournament.
So for now, and which will change in about 10 minutes, because that's how this week goes. My Final Four is sitting at Gonzaga, Kentucky, Arizona. And I just get to the Midwest every time, and I'm like, oh, I picked ones and two seeds. I don't want to pick Kansas. Give me Iowa.
Ooh, wow.
Greg Waddell said that the other night on the 368 show. I was like, yo, I was playing good right now, but I don't know if I see them in the Final Four, man.
I think honestly, when I finalize my bracket before next week, before Thursday, I think I'm going to end up with Kansas coming out of that region because I feel most confident, but I feel bad making all my picks one and two seeds. So I think if I look outside the top two lines, who has the best draw, I think, to get to the Final Four that's not on those top two lines, I think UCLA is there.
Yeah, UCLA as well.
Yeah, I think they're one of the four teams in the country. They're top 15 in offense and defensive efficiency adjusted. St. Mary's is a good five seed. I wouldn't say it's Iowa. And I think that's a matchup UCLA can win. It's also not going to be a direct geographical advantage for either team. They're both West Coast playing. And they're probably going to get Baylor in the Sweet 16. It was great. Even injured Baylor is a really good team, but injured Baylor isn't healthy Baylor either. I think UCLA's got a pretty decent, like, of the four seeds, probably the easiest path to the Elite Eight, where it'll get Kentucky most likely, like, it just from an analytics standpoint. They're the two seed, they're the best two seed, they'll probably get there. But could you imagine that? Coach K's final year, plus we could get a UCLA Kentucky Elite Eight. What a year this shapes up. The Michigan State Duke in the second round, if we get there. And if we don't get that, then Foster Lawyer beat Michigan State, which is even better.
That would definitely be sick. Drew, who you got?
My Final Four, man, I got Gonzaga. I got Duke. I have Arizona.
They're in the same region. Gonzaga, Duke are both
out. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm looking at my Elite Eight. I'm looking at my Elite Eight. Wrong. Here we go. So I have Gonzaga, Kentucky, Villanova, and Kansas. In my Final Four, I'm trusting the Wildcats to get there, and I have Gonzaga beating Kansas in national championship game.
Oh, and I took Arizona over Gonzaga in my championship game.
Tavi Lloyd beating his old boss,
and that's partially a safety pick, I think, because I think Gonzaga is more likely to make the championship game than UCLA if those are my two in the Final Four.
Yeah,
and I think Arizona. Part of it is I think Arizona just based on what we've heard, that was kind of thing. I think they're going to get Carissa back for the second weekend.
Yeah.
And if they do, they're a different team. And I think Arizona sets up great. They have an awesome region for them. Like, I think it's a tough teams. Illinois is great. Houston's really good. Tennessee's playing awesome. Villanova, I've said, is probably the most consistent team in the country. Yeah. All those teams have one thing in common. They play slowly.
Yeah.
Arizona doesn't play slow. Arizona will make all those teams uncomfortable. If they can set the tone early with their tempo, they can make everyone uncomfortable in that region.
Yeah, you're not wrong, man. For me, I have Arizona, I have Gonzaga, I have Kentucky, and I have Auburn right in the ship and getting to the Final Four, man. And then I have Gonzaga and Arizona in the championship, and I have Mark Few getting his first national championship, beating his old boss Tommy Lloyd in the title game, man. But we are running out of time on this episode, man. So we want to thank you guys for tuning in. Thank Lucas for coming on, man. And for all you guys filling out brackets, man, hope you guys, as my guy Ross Dean says, keep a bottle of kerosene nearby and a bottle of Kleenex, man. But until next time, folks, enjoy the match. You beating on me. It's time to get a check, boy.
on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take your last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy. Let's go. What's the topic of discussion?